Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:34, and that is Pacific Standard Time. And today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And just a recap of what's been happening this week, and it is by and large been reasonably positive that you're in here this week. What perhaps one of the bigger pieces of news in Asia was that the Chinese regulator was replaced, and then we had this downward dynamic yesterday, which really put pressure on the market. And it's not unusual that when you get somebody, a new central banker or a new market regulator, that the market sells off very shortly afterwards, in order to test their resolve as to how much they're going to support the market. And that certainly was the case yesterday in China, where the A-share index just pulled back very sharply. And then, you know, today it was up by about 1%. So it steadied a bit, but the Hong Kong index was up over 2%, and the H shares are perhaps the cheapest market in the world right now, and the dividend is almost approaching the level of the PE. So this is a benighted index in that it has been really very weak, but that's not to say that it isn't cheap. Then when you look at Europe, the majority of indices were in positive territory today, and the banking sector is now beginning to differentiate, or at least investors are beginning to differentiate between those that have got more solid fundamentals and those that are, well, let's just say that they have less solid fundamentals. Then, but that's quite a different situation than we had over the preceding couple of months, where there was indiscriminate selling of the banking sector. So, for example, Lloyd's rallied really very impressively yesterday because they're going to be able to pay a special dividend, and that they're getting out from under the cloud of the payment protection insurance scandal that just about all of the UK banks have been paying for over the last couple of years. And that, in fact, was such an enormous payout that it has greatly inhibited the performance of those shares. But by the same token, HSBC is still in a downtrend. They still have issues that remain unresolved, and not least that they continue to be pursued for corruption charges, and they continue to have this exposure to the Chinese market. And of course, it's Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation. Little wonder that they have exposure to the Chinese, and indeed to the Hong Kong property markets. Well, then I had two rather interesting emails today. The first was asking whether the move that we had on Wednesday was a higher reaction low. And the only way that you could answer that question is that only if you look at the market in a very short-term basis was it a higher reaction low. When you look at it over the medium term, and generally speaking, what we do is we look at things from the long, the medium, and the short term, then you look at the market and you can't but see that there's been a loss of momentum over the last 14 months, and that the rebound that we've had so far is nothing more than a reversionary rally back up towards the region of the 200 moving average. And that is now, for the S&P 500, is coinciding with the region of the psychological 2000 level. Well, that's when the big questions are going to be asked. Is the index going to get there first? Is it going to sustain a move above it? When it pulls back, will then we have evidence of a higher reaction low? And that would be the market finding support above the lows that were put in earlier this month, and those were a retest of the lows that were put in January, which were a retest of the lows that were put in 2014. So we've bounced from the same level three times now, but the leadership in the market is continuing to narrow, and yes, we are seeing that a number of companies that we regard as autonomies are doing perhaps better than the wider market, and the dividend aristocrats are doing better than the wider market. And one of the reasons they're doing that is because a lot of these types of companies have got defensive characteristics, and that's not generally the most positive thing that one can say about the market when it's been rallying for much of the last 7 years. Well, then you can only conclude that we're still in this corrective phase, that this is the first big range after an incredibly impressive breakout from a 13-year range. And from in the example of the NASDAQ, it got all the way back up to test the bubble peak posted in 2000, and this is the first big consolidation following what had been an incredibly impressive advance. Well, the fact that it is the really big global companies with global franchises exposed to the consumer, yes, they have defensive characteristics, and they often are dividend aristocrats. And in the case of US-listed dividend aristocrats, that means they've been raising dividends for each of the last 25 years consecutively. Well, they're performing, but it's also because we have this situation where, yes, your commodity exporters have been really under a great deal of pressure, and not least because they have US dollar denominated loans, but also that we're getting to a point now where at least some of these currencies have stabilized, and that's particularly the case for Indonesia. And then you have to consider that after a major currency devaluation, which we have certainly had, and particularly in those commodity-producing countries, that when commodity prices begin to stabilize, so do their currencies. And then you get people starting to think about how competitive they've become. And perhaps we're not that far away from that kind of scenario, and that might be an additional reason why big global companies leveraged to the consumer, having been really quiet for the last couple of years, are now beginning to turn to outperformance once more. Well, the rise of the global consumer is something that remains a phenomenally bullish characteristic over the medium to long term. But it's probably not something that many people are really worried about in here right now. Now, that brings us to the energy markets, where Mr. Al-Naimi, who is the Saudi oil minister, was in Houston this week and told the Texas oilmen that they really should endeavor to cut their cost of production or get out of the business. And he even got out of Texas in one piece after telling them to shutter their businesses. And then, well, Saudi Arabia never told them that when prices were high. That identifies the unconventional producers as a competitor to Saudi Arabia. And isn't it interesting that sentiment has become progressively worse? And even Mr. Al-Naimi is talking about $20 oil. And then when you see that sentiment gets progressively worse, you really have to start looking at what exactly is the price doing. And prices are no longer going down. And that's the fact that you not only have prices no longer going down, but also that sentiment is continuing to deteriorate. When you have that kind of divergence, it really is something that we have to pay attention to. So West Texas Intermediate is back up to $33. And there is a significant, there's a $2 premium for Brent crude, and Brent crude has posted a higher reaction low. And a higher reaction low tells you that somebody with deep pockets was willing to come in at a progressively higher level because they needed to initiate a long position. And then we know how oversold these prices are. And we've already seen a number of bankruptcies taking place. And then we've also seen that there have been an increasing number of people fearful that there will be additional bankruptcies. And that's still on the table. But that means also that some supply is coming out of the market, and that we could get it rallying from these levels. And a point I've made repeatedly is that it's not so much the question of where prices eventually bottom, but rather how far they're going to rally subsequently, because we're in a new environment. There are additional, there has been huge investment in additional supply. We now have additional supply, and prices will top out when that additional supply becomes economic to start pumping it out again. And that means then that natural gas is probably a good template for what we can expect from oil. But the decline in oil prices and the decline in commodity prices has been deflationary. We would describe it as disinflationary. Prices went up a lot, they came down a lot, but it has moved the needle in terms of what people are expecting. So bond yields went to really incredible levels, and certainly the US and the UK have got positive yields, but whole swathes of the bond market in Europe and Switzerland and Japan are trading at negative yields. That we had this environment where people were very worried about deflation, that bond yields were down to levels that were really pricing in a recession. But we don't have the economic fundamentals, and we don't have the economic statistics that support that view. So something is wrong in this market. And then we have to consider what that might be. And just like any other market, rather than simply looking at the level, we have to look at what is behind in terms of supply and demand. And if we look at demand for bonds, well, central banks and regulators, in their efforts to ensure that we're not going to have another credit crisis, have created a market for bonds by classifying sovereign debt as tier one, and then insisting that banks, insurance companies, and pensions have to own more of them to protect themselves from a repeat of what happened in 2008. That's despite the fact, of course, that what happened in 2008 was almost a once in a century event, so in terms of its severity. So whether that is entirely appropriate is probably a question for another day, but that's the demand side of the equation. But then you have to look at supply. If they've created this new and really static source of additional demand, then supply has to keep pace with that. But it isn't keeping pace, because the USA has moved out of its quantitative easing program. The UK is no longer engaged in quantitative easing. And that means that they're issuing fewer bonds. And then you look at the way that the Eurozone has been structured, in that they are engaged in this fiscal consolidation, and their debt issuance has contracted considerably because of the rules that all of these bailout countries have to follow. So then we don't have the additional supply of bonds there. And JGBs aren't really internationally traded. So little wonder then that the cash market for bonds is less liquid than the futures market. Well, yields got down to incredibly low levels. And I'm going to use treasuries as an example. They got down to 1.5% on the 10-year. And that was an accelerated decline. And now we continue to look like that we're going to have a reversionary rally. But the problem is, with this supply and demand situation that we have, in addition to all of the other considerations that are out there, it's going to be difficult for bond yields to rally unless that supply-demand dynamic changes. Well, there's little prospect of that in the short term. So the rally that we've had in bonds is likely to be unwound, and we're probably going to get a mean reversion. But how much further will they go after that? It will be entirely at the discretion of central banks and how much they're willing to raise rates. And then how able the Fed will be, or the Bank of England will be, to raise rates when just about nowhere else is doing the same thing. And the impact that that would have on their respective currencies means that any kind of policy in central banks is going to have to be measured. And they're really going to have to bide their time. But the problem that they could potentially face later this year is inflation. Because the economic fundamentals, particularly in the USA, are really quite favorable, and wages are rising. And that's important, because that really does move the needle for the Fed in terms of their inflationary expectations. They've used hedonics, and they've excluded a lot of commodity prices from the inflation measure, but you can't remove wages, and wages really do move the needle again. So then commodity prices are incredibly depressed, but they are increasingly look like they have bottomed. And that means then that oil prices can go higher from here. Industrial commodities can go higher from here. And then because they have had an influence in terms of the deflationary perceptions, if they start to rally, and particularly rallying from low levels, because if you just take oil as an example, just an $8 move when the price was at 27 amounts to a significant percentage move. And then that means that the movements in commodities can have an outsized effect on inflationary perceptions if they're rallying off very low levels. So then the prospect of us getting some sort of inflationary fear cropping up later this year is looking more likely than not. And that really will pose a problem for central banks, because if they have inflation, then they're going to be a little bit worried about that. They're not going to want to raise interest rates aggressively, but they're going to want to ensure that they get moderate inflation to allow them to pay down what is just a record amount of debt. So we're going to be in a very interesting situation in terms of bonds over the next 6 months, and right now they're looking really quite expensive. Then when we go out and we look at the longer term, we're certainly in a more difficult environment over the short term, and this is still a corrective environment for the majority of stock markets, and then there are potential issues with the bond markets. So and the normalization of interest rates was never going to be easy, and because we've never been through anything like this before, then we can only watch the charts and monitor things as they develop. But perhaps the medium to long term question is how much is going to affect the pace of technological innovation, the demands of a nascent middle class that are striving for a better standard of living, and the revolution that we're having in energy. And the answer is that it's probably not going to affect them at all. So there are powerfully bullish factors that really have the capacity to drive a secular bull market, but just getting over the hump of interest rates was always going to be an impediment, and that continues to be the case right now. And just as an example of that technological innovation, I had a chat this morning with the CEO of Software, that's SoftWear, and what they produce is a robot, a system that sews garments. And if you think about it today, every single garment that you're wearing has been sewed together by a human being. Well, obviously sitting in front of a machine, but a human being nonetheless. And theirs is the first product that takes the human out of the equation. And that's a fantastic example, not just of robotics, but also optics. It's really their use of optics and software that is allowing them to overcome the issues that that robots have with feeling, with the tactile experience. And it means that, one of the things that that really stood out from the conversation was that they were surprised by how much interest that they had got from companies in places like China and Sri Lanka, and that companies with billion-dollar turnovers are looking at full automation of the sewing process within 10 years. So they're investing in those types of systems now. It really suggests that the manufacturing process is going to be increasingly driven by machines, that there'll be less need to offshore because labor is going to be less of a factor. Then by siting factories reasonably close to major population centers and creating a sort of a customization culture, then transport costs will be enormously reduced. And one of the things that never seems to get mentioned in terms of pollution statistics or is that large container ships are some of the biggest polluters on Earth because of the kind of diesel that they burn. So technological innovation is really incredibly exciting. I'll write up the details from that interview on Monday because it's really interesting stuff. And you know, they're a privately held company, and of course they will be seeking a listing at some point in future. But it's just an example of the kinds of things that are really exciting and that are going on out there. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.